Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I, of course, am Josh Nason. My name's in the show, writer, editor, podcaster for the website, former writer for Bloody Elbow, Fight Magazine, Bleacher Report, and a bunch of other websites that no longer exist because I helped kill them off. So good for me. Eventually coming for WrestlingObserver.com. So, yeah, let's get into it. It's early part of August here. In the Northeast, I'm sure it's probably the early part of August, wherever you are as well. And it is hot as balls, as the kids like to say. I am in the Evergreen Studios, and it is in my house, as I call them. And it is very warm up here. We have to do something about air conditioning in the upper floor of our house because it is just like hair dryers just blowing constantly, that type of feeling when it gets really hot. And I am sweating bullets as I'm talking to you. Not because I'm nervous, but I am a little bit nervous. We just met for the first time. Let's get to the show here. Brian Campbell from CBS Sports is joining us this week. And I had heard Brian, I'm very familiar with Brian through social media and some of his other work, podcasts and so on. But I had heard him on the MMA Beat, which I watched last week. And it was really good. I thought he brought a life to the show, and it was he was really good. So if you saw that, you saw him on there, but you probably have heard him on some other podcasts as well. He used to work for ESPN and been doing the combat sports thing for a while. So Brian and I talked for half an hour about all types of stuff. We just kind of ran through a bunch of MMA news, the classic We Gotta Talk About Conor segment, shout out to Dave Meltzer, and talk about a little Ronda Rousey, and some other just kind of news, Madison Square Garden, all that other type of stuff. So good half an hour conversation. And yeah, let's get right to it, right? Brian Campbell, CBS Sports. Let's go. Well, everyone, big guest star this week, and someone that I have known his name and known his work for quite some time, but I was very happy last week as I was watching one of my favorite shows on YouTube, the MMA Beat, and was happy to hear his voice, his dulcet tones, if you will. You know his work from obviously in the ESPN in the past, but now doing some great stuff for CBS Sports, and he's a combat sports guy. He covers it all, including pro wrestling, which is a good thing. Brian Campbell joins us this week. And Brian, based on, some of the rapid fire questions that you got last week on the MMA Beat, we'll start you out with a real fastball here. What was the best TV show that you're watching right now?
Wow. Great question. It's a curveball start. Besides NXT, right? I'm not going to be like the nerdy wrestling answer.
Right.
We're talking about real TV shows that I'm watching now. Do you watch the Good Doctor by any chance? It's coming into a second season, I believe, on ABC.
I do not watch that.
All right. It's about an autistic doctor at a major hospital in San Jose. And he's so brilliant, but he also screws up. It's fantastic. I can't get enough of it.
Got you. So San Jose. So that's the – is Dave Meltzer a consultant on this show?
Oh, well, how about that for full circle right there? If they have any injuries related to the art form of wrestling, I do believe Dave is on call in case.
Yeah, he just rambles into like the commercial breaks and things like that and all that. I will give one. I will say that one of my favorite shows right now, and has been for a few years, and one I initially was hesitant to watch because of the name of it, and then I am glad that I changed my mind thanks to recommendations from friends, The Affair. On Showtime. It's really good. It starts with an affair, spoiler alert, and it just blossoms out from there. And it's just really entertaining watch week in and week out. Really good stuff. So I'd recommend that one.
All right. I will add that to my must see list or my DVR list, which is now overflowing. I've got 13 episodes of Impact Wrestling I got to catch up on. That's what's taking over most of my DVR. There's not enough time these days for three combat sports. There's too much crap going on. It's great.
I know, that's the thing. And you do all three of them. So I didn't realize. I did realize this, that you did all three. But the fact you're able to do this for CBS Sports is great. And obviously doing the podcast and the written work and all that stuff. Now, obviously, you had been with ESPN for a while and people know you from there, but how did you kind of get into the superhighway of covering combat sports?
Yeah. Like so many people, it's that full combination of right time, right place, luck, passion, and it just comes together. I started at ESPN in 2005, and I had 12 great years there. I worked a lot of third and even fourth shifts, if fourth is an actual thing, deep into the night, many unforgivable years of grinding. But, you know, somewhere along that way, I sort of, you know, was already addicted to boxing and was sort of deep into that groove as a fan, the pre-YouTube days of, you know, collecting DVDs and all that stuff. And then it just blossomed from there where I said, you know, this is the road I want to go. And, you know, it's like catcher's the shortest way to the majors in baseball, they say. In some ways, in a conglomerate like ESPN, maybe a niche sport like boxing is a quick way to make a name for yourself and to get known. And, you know, we're at the launch of Twitter, 2011. I'm covering fights. I'm trying to work my way into an editing writing role. And when I finally was able to do that, then, you know, 2012 with ESPN, I'm a writer, editor in boxing and MMA. A couple of years later, I was lucky to be really the guy knocking on the door behind the scenes saying, hey, can we cover pro wrestling? Can we go for this? Can we do something in that space? You know, anytime a wrestler died, unfortunately, they'd be walking around the newsroom going, hey, who can talk about this? Who can write an obituary? You know, and you're right place, right time, and raise your hand. You can walk into some really cool opportunities. And I've been lucky to do that in all three sports. You know, been on SportsCenter, been sideline reporting on Friday Night Fights, done a lot of stuff in a short window of time where, you know, I never dreamt of this. I wanted to be in sports. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to do cool stuff, but I never, you know, knew or imagined it could be this large and I could get, you know, hired for a great offer I couldn't refuse to actually leave ESPN and join CBS and cover all three sports at once, which is not easy, but man, is it fun and rewarding.
It's awesome. Yeah, you're like the very Mauro Ranallo-esque, you know, get a chance to do all three.
There it is. It is rare. You know, there's a few guys that put their hand in it a little bit, but, you know, it's not easy from the sense that there's just so much going on. I mean, you know, just take pro wrestling alone. It's like a full-time job to be able to have a clue and know what you're talking about and be a guy that people go to. And that's not even counting all the, you know, boxing and MMA you'll miss and have to catch up on. It's sometimes you have to be surface level because there's only so many hours in a week, but you try to use your free time as long as the wife allows. Hint, wink, wink, to try to catch up on, you know, on everything.
I know, and the kids and all that stuff. Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult, especially with so much stuff to watch. But let's bounce around a little bit because we don't have a ton of time today. But let's jump around to some MMA topics, and we'll go into wrestling a little bit as well. This headline came out today about and this I think maybe a little bit of Darren Rovell S type stuff going on here, but like PFL, Pro Fight League, basically the group that airs on Thursday nights on NBC Sports, getting a round of, I think it was about $28 million in Series B funding. And of course they do a thing where they put out, you know, a few celebrity investors like Kevin Hart, Tony Robbins, and Ted Leonsis and a couple other guys there. You know, total amounts 28, and, you know, there's other investors as well. He made it seem, and I don't want to pin this all on Darren Rovell, but he made it seem like a lot bigger deal than it was. If people remembered last year, I believe was, you know, UFC, at the time, WME IMG did that thing where, you know, 20 celebrities like Tom Brady, Serena Williams, Conan O'Brien, all these people were these major investors or invested money in UFC. And my guess is that majority of them didn't even know they were investors in UFC. It just got part of their portfolio. I don't really make too much of this. I mean, it's cool that they have this unique format, but I mean, I don't really hear a lot of buzz about them or talk other than kind of in our MMA bubble. Do you make anything really of this investment?
No, this was very shocking. I think a lot of people had the same eye opening going, well, what can this promotion be now? Because, you know, in this space, it's UFC dominating. It's certainly Bellator having its own niche. And sometimes they feel like they're building for the future. Sometimes they feel like they're just playing the game of nostalgia, you know, clickbait. What can PFL's image and identity be? I mean, certainly for the health of the sport, this is cool. This is a good step forward to raise that kind of money. Ultimately, can you get the fighters that make people want to watch you? And I know that they've had some success with a TV deal, and they're on the radar for the hardcore MMA fan for sure. And you'll see some names pop in there that have gotten, you know, let go of UFC, for example. But until you're, you know, on a level where you're producing must-see fights with must-see fighters, it's hard to take it too seriously outside of, hey, it's good to have another catch-all league that's well-funded that's another option than the UFC. So let's see where they go with it. I know they've changed names in the past. They've changed gimmicks in the past. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. But for now, it's really just a wake me when you're ready. Wake me when you're ready for the next step to show me what you got.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're talking, about so much content to watch. It's hard because we're in this position now where there is so much stuff to watch with every single medium, and regular, traditional pro sports runs into this as well, where the mindset would be, okay, let's boil this stuff down and let's make shorter seasons, less shows that are more impactful. So that way when we put something on, people are like, I cannot miss this event. But we know we're in the content era where you have to fill hours and minutes and try to do all this stuff. So it thins everything out. I mean, Bellator I'm looking at some of the events they have coming up in the next few weeks. And it's like, what are we doing here? It's just, there's so much stuff, time they have to fill, but in fight sports and in wrestling and combat sports in general, it's like the quality isn't there to make the top to bottom, like we're used to or back in the day, so to speak.
Yeah, that's the biggest fear. And it certainly is, even with ESPN getting in with the new UFC TV deal, which is a ton of dates, and you can really certainly criticize the direction UFC has gone the last few years. The more money they seem to make heading into that big 2016 pay-per-view year, which was, of course, the same year as their $4 billion sale, the more watered down things felt on the bottom. You don't feel that as much when the top end is fantastic and it's, big-time pay-per-views with fights you need to see. But once those fights turn the other direction, the other stuff starts to bleed out earlier. Is too much of a good thing a bad thing? Yes. I mean, we certainly saw that in boxing the last few years, essentially when Al Haymon and Premier Boxing Champions bought up all that TV time, and suddenly they are back on regular TV and it seems so optimistic and they're on NBC and ESPN and CBS and Fox and whoa. But then the quality of fights just wasn't there. And there's certainly a strong case to make that too much MMA can be a bad thing. As long as each organization can sort of have their niche of what they do, what do you stand for? What are you supposed to be? It can work in that space.
Yeah. Well, speaking of boxing, I don't know if you heard this, a major name in pro boxing is coming over to MMA this October. This guy, Conor McGregor, I think you probably heard of him from this, the big Floyd Mayweather battle. I don't know what else we can really add to the Conor's coming back conversation. Obviously when you guys did the beat last Thursday, the news hadn't come out yet, but everyone was kind of, wondering if, he and Khabib were going to be at the press conference and so on. But what I found was kind of interesting, and I think most people did too, is, the whole Conor thing happens, how UFC uses the bus footage, what that says about fight promotion. I think we kind of know, like, everyone kind of expected that to happen, but also what that says to guys to like Michael Chiesa and Ray Borg and those types. I think we kind of understand what the game is there. But I think the thing that they didn't expect was for Nate Diaz to really get pissed about this. And I think people were kind of laughing about his tweet and his reaction, being like, oh, that's just him being him. I think he's a little bit more angry than more people are taking into account. And I don't, I don't know if this MSG fight is necessarily a lock. And I mean, he's the type we know that he'll just walk away and be like, if he feels wronged. And I mean, at this whole, Conor coming back, the Khabib thing, the footage, the Nate Diaz thing, what was your key takeaways from the big announcement last Thursday afternoon?
Certainly some big, some macro things to look at there. One of them is just their handling of Nate Diaz is so puzzling. And I'm not going to try to sit here and say that, the Diaz brothers are easy to handle. But this isn't the Diaz brothers from 6-7 years ago, where there's those wild characters who show up in co-main events and they can fight, but they kind of always sort of not come through when they get pushed to the highest level. But they're wild and their interviews are out of control. And we don't know if they're half crazy or what the heck's going on. But Nate has evolved from that and certainly took the rub from the two Conor McGregor fights to become like an absolute star. Like to talk about a pro wrestling parallel, it's like he kind of acts like a heel, yet is so beloved in an organic way from fans because he doesn't care about the BS. He's not about kissing butt and getting in line and playing the game. And the fact that UFC has been unable or more unwilling to capitalize on that and make him a star, especially the last 2 years after the sale, Conor McGregor goes away, Rousey goes away, John Jones is in trouble. We've been through this conversation a million times. The star cupboard is empty. You're telling me you couldn't have trotted out Nate Diaz 2 to 3 times, paid him the money he deserves, maybe not spread lies about him if you believe what Nate is saying, that he doesn't actually get offered these fights for good money and constantly turn it down. It's tough to know exactly where the full truth is, but how you've been unable to capitalize on this guy and go more than 2 years. And if you really didn't tell him that Conor's coming back and going to fight Khabib, and Nate learned it the same time we did right there, you can understand why he'd be upset for a few different reasons, whether it's pay-per-view points to the point where Nate has been on the record saying, I'm only coming back if I can get Conor. So the whole idea of will he not take this fight? Look, the Diazes are wild enough where you never know. You never know if they're going to walk away. But I really hope somebody is in Nate's camp and in his ear that's just like, you haven't made any money in 2.5 years, or at least not on this level. If you take this fight, it's going to be a good payday, you'd think. It's going to be a big-time push on a big-time card. And if you win, you're probably going to either fight Conor or fight for the title or fight for both. So let's do that. But I said this is a macro thing. The macro thing is, how do you not make Nate Diaz into a thing when he was a part of two of the three biggest pay-per-view fights in MMA history? Like, it's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, and I think it's the fact that these they don't really want to fight that much, you know, and I think that sometimes the things that we kind of take for granted, and having talked to so many fighters as you have, and you know, that a lot of these guys, some guys love to fight, and other guys, it's their means to an end. And I get that sense with the Diazes, it was just a means to an end. And it's kind of weird because you don't hear from them that often. When you do, it's not really straight talk, like trying to understand some of this, but these guys are mysteries, but they have this allure. And I honestly, this past year, I got so fatigued with the, are they going to come back? Aren't they? Are they? Aren't they? And it's just like, you know, and if they want to come back, you know, there's plenty of talent, but do they want to be part of the gang? Do they want to be standouts? And I was interested, you know, with Poirier, you know, he wasn't the McGregor, the McGregor fight that Diaz may have been looking for. But I'm curious, and I would have loved someone to ask at that press conference on Thursday, like, why this fight? Why now? Why, you know, and we, unfortunately, we haven't got that yet.
They asked him, and of course, he gave a very Diaz-like answer. I forgot. It was like six words, and it made no sense. But yeah. Right, I think it screams to me that maybe he needed the money. Maybe after 2.5 years, he needed at least to get back in the game to build the momentum to get to a big fight. He assumed he was at a level after tasting that, you know, those millions of pay-per-view money on that level against Conor McGregor, that he was going to be worth that his brand had been built to that level. And I think you can argue that he was right. The fact that, you know, he doesn't want to fight a lot, that the titles don't mean a lot to him. Guess what? He's a special attraction. He's a special human being and mindset. Same with his brother. You don't need them to be in there. Like, every time Anderson Silva comes back, I'm like, why is he fighting Derek Brunson? Why is he fighting a guy? Why is he in his early 40s getting back in line for a title shot? You've already gotten past that point. You're an attraction. Fight other attractions. It's really not that hard in my mind. I hope they would get that with the Diazes. They may only fight once a year, but at least employ them once a year and give them the money they deserve. I know that, you know, we're slowly changing where eventually UFC fighters will get paid, hopefully, the money they deserve. And certainly comparative to what the other stars on, like, let's say boxing get, we're still not there because UFC has been so strong and in control of everything with one promotion and all that. But I mean, it's time for the guys that bring the eyeballs to get the payment. And I didn't want to go too far past what you had brought up about Conor McGregor. We're so excited about this fight, and rightfully so. I'm like, I could give you a 15-minute diatribe about why this is the biggest fight in MMA history, both in terms of storyline and in terms of like ability and the fact that they one guy's strength is the other guy's weakness on both sides. I love the crap out of this fight, Josh Nason, and I know you do too. But we gotta continue to bang the drums and say, UFC, you got to give us something about how easily you're letting Conor off. It's not just that you're letting him off, you're rewarding him. Yeah. Like, the precedent that it sets is so dangerous. And you have to, like, if your response, I'm going to ask the question for you. If your question is, hey, BC, what's going to make you happy? What's going to make you stop whining about it? It's certainly, if it's a 6-month suspension, that might not work, right? I want to see this fight now. I don't really want to wait 6 months, but I want a little bit more honesty and transparency. Maybe I just need Dana to pick up the microphone and just say, hey, media, special treatment for special players. Conor's a special player. Yeah. We don't care about the past. We're going to market it. This is the fight game. This is not ethics or morality. Maybe I need that. I don't know. But like, something just feels grimy about this. This isn't Mike Tyson coming out of prison and then getting right back into a pay-per-view role. You expect that. This is somebody who committed a crime against his own coworkers And there's nothing that happened. It's just ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And that's the thing is no one seems to have a real good answer for what that is because, you know, the court system really didn't do their job. He was able to do the, you know, the plea deal. And then, yeah, there's really no, there's no good answer because people want to see him back in there, you know, but there's, yeah, I think if Dana White came out and said, look, it said exactly what you said, I think people could clench your teeth a little bit about it, but at least, you know, we got the straightforward answer, not kind of the, oh, we're good, especially after he said it was the most, you know, despicable act of all time. And then, you know, within 24 hours, he was just like, he was cool with them. So it just, I think we all know what's going on, but it'd be kind of cool for them to say, you know, this is what's going on and you guys just have to deal with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I mean, they kind of need to do that, by the way, not just for Conor, but for Brock getting the title shot coming off of a steroid test, for Darren Till getting a title shot coming off a 4-pound miss of weight and a disputed decision loss that barely anyone thought he won. It's barely been a year and a half of questionable decisions, and you lose the faith of the hardcore fan after a while. And I hate seeing them go in that direction because, like I mentioned off the top of the show, I'm a boxing fan by choice and birth, and I've seen the sins that have ruined my favorite sport. If boxing had an organized league and a structure and a set of rules people cared about, I don't lie to you, it would be a top four sport in the world. I still believe that because when it's at its best, there's nothing like it. UFC is at its best in MMA a lot more than boxing, but I'm seeing too many trends in the opposite direction of really watering down not just the product, but the integrity of the product, and that can be even worse.
So on that same vein, Greg Hardy, former NFLer, controversial obviously for you know, domestic violent past and some really bad stuff, you know, get picked up his second victory, pro victory last night, 17 seconds on the Tuesday Night Contender Series. And they really not, you know, he's under a UFC developmental deal, essentially, but they're really, you know, we're not really not sure what to do with him. I think everyone kind of agrees he's, you know, too inexperienced to go into the UFC at this point. But what do you do? And when he gets there, you know, obviously a lot more eyeballs are going to be on him. And you know, that drumbeat is going to pound a little bit louder about his past and why the UFC is doing this and everything. What do you do with Greg Hardy if you're the UFC?
I think you just be really honest about it. If you're honest about it, you'll create a split right down the middle of people that are only going to watch him to hope that he gets knocked out, and people going to watch him in hope of what Americans love, the second chance and the comeback story. So marketing-wise, you're set. But the key point is what you said. How quickly do we push him? Because, I mean, his amateur fights were jokes. Maybe that first fight he had on the Dana White Contender Series looked like a guy who was the most fit, at least across from him. Another ex-NFL guy was a Tyler Austin that he knocked out instant.
Yep.
Second guy didn't look like he was anything just last night. You really got to get this guy, you know, up to speed, because like Dana said to him afterwards and relayed during interviews on Tuesday night, you know, how's your wrestling? Because you're going to need your wrestling because no one's going to stand with you. And that might be true. He's got great size. He's got NFL explosion. There's something there. Certainly this may be the only division where somebody in their early 30s can completely walk from another sport and walk right in like a Brock Lesnar did. Only of course, Hardy doesn't have the, you know, at least one element or discipline of a fighting background on that level that Brock did. So I hope they continue to do it slow. I have no problem with them televising it. It doesn't need to be a CM Punk like co-main or open of a pay-per-view card, but I have a problem with them televising it and slowly, organically building this guy into an attraction while being really honest about his story and also being honest that we're not trying to push him like Kimbo Slice. Like, he's a killer, but at the same time, we're going to try to match him with 50-year-olds. Like, no, we're just going to say he is what he is, a raw heavyweight. And he's fun to watch, and we don't know how far he can go. And don't forget, he did do these things. And we're not going to harp on it, but we're going to let you know that we know that he did these things. And I have no problem with it. And I think he could do some things and he could be fun. But you can't do the recent UFC thing, which is throw him in the cage right away against somebody with a pulse.
Yeah.
And that's only – it's not – you know, they didn't do that for CM Punk, certainly. But they did that for, you know, for almost everyone else. Anytime they get a prospect that looks pretty good, you could be in Sage Northcutt territory. And luckily, Sage is turning his career around, it looks. But you just got to be careful with this.
Yeah. My hope is that if they really see something in him – that their PR group works with him and work with him on contrition, you know, and being taught and having him do an interview and talk about all these things. And, you know, I think there's a way to win people back. And believe me, for some of the things that he's done, you know, there's no excuse and you can never be like, okay, you know what? You're fine now. Just there's some things you just can't turn back from. but it's how you live the rest of your life and try to atone for that. That's the big thing, you know? And if he doesn't do that, if people see right through that, that's when you kind of get all sides turning against you, as opposed to maybe a group saying, he might have a chance. Look what he's trying to do. He's donating money here. He's doing this. He's talking to schools, those type of things. Like, you know, there's a way to do it, but it's only if he really wants to. If there's like, look, he's just a fighter and this is what fighters do and all that, then, you know, it's going to be a much bigger problem down the line if he starts getting more buzz behind him.
That's well said. And I do give him credit. And while it's a minor thing in the interviews, he's yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. I mean, I don't need that from fighters, especially if I'm interviewing them, but that's a man who's saying, I want to change the way I'm looked at. And yeah, what can you do? You can applaud that. That's great.
Yep. We'll go quick hit through the rest of these topics as we're running up against the clock. Ronda Rousey made her big Raw debut on Monday in a match against Alicia Fox. Ratings were not that great, unfortunately. Things kind of trended down throughout the entire show, as Raw does. And she's set to face Alexa Bliss at SummerSlam. How would you grade Rousey's WWE run thus far?
Weird, because it'd be the average of two different grades, right? Like the in-ring performance on pay-per-views has been absolutely fantastic, or the in-ring performance when you set up a really well done sort of physical scene, right? A press or a contract signing that ends with somebody going through a table. There's been a lot of problems with the early part of her build as a babyface, where they put her in situations without the experience to fail. I think they've rebounded nicely in the last 2 months from that sense, where they've done the smart thing. You limit her dialogue, you make her facial expressions, which she can do well, intense, all about the fact that she is a badass and she is a fighter. So overall, the grade somewhere in between a B+, because man, when she is a natural and a plus talent and athlete, when she's in there, there's a crispness to her moves that I don't think any man or woman in WWE has the exact same thing. It just looks real. And even I give her credit in her pay-per-view match with Nia Jax, that I thought she sold the pain and the selling very well. I thought sometimes she's so quick on her moves that you wonder if she actually is hurting the other person, which is a good thing in the sense of entertainment. I do have questions with my confidence that they know exactly what they're doing with her, because taking her on, and I know you put her in a Raw main event to advertise it in the hope of getting ratings, and you just told me it didn't really work out that well for them, but there's a specialty to her, a novelty of seeing her wrestle that I think should be pay-per-view only. And I think they should protect that. And unless she's coming out for a 10-second squash match or somebody interferes right away, I don't think there's any other thing you should do than that, because you want to keep this special as long as you can, because there's going to become a point, whether you like Rousey or not, cheering for her or not, where it's not going to be special anymore. And you hope by that point, of course, she's well adjusted and she's a regular superstar, but don't start treating her like a regular superstar yet. So it's been a little bit of hit or miss the whole way. Overall, it's a plus. It's great for ratings. It's great for the image. It's great for everything. I'm happy they're doing it. I just really had some concerns early, as I'm sure you did too, about what they were doing. And sometimes I still get some concerns now. So it's a little hit or miss.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I wish they would have her on TV less. I don't like when she's out there, like, you know, 10-15 in, you know, cornering Natty in a random singles match. I think she's just a special attraction to me. I just, the Brock formula seemed to be the most obvious thing, and maybe they didn't want to do that, and she wanted to be one of the girls and be out there more often. I agree with what you're saying. I think she's a very special attraction, should be pay-per-view, big event only, big house show only. And keep her special. You know, I think that's the big thing. There's so much, as we were talking about earlier, so much content, so much stuff to watch. You got to keep her special. And you got to people, you know, when she's on, people need to turn their heads and be like, I need to check this out.
It's the tiny details that does keep her special. So you got to watch who's allowed to get offense in on her. If she's a UFC champion and a badass, then I don't know if I like that Foxy taps out of an armbar in a half second, but Stephanie McMahon can kind of, you know, wait it out a bit and fight her off for a while. So I'm saying those little things are going to have to matter. You're going to have to tell stories with Ronda that are just different than the obvious one they keep telling.
I would agree. Final question. We don't have a MSG main event yet, and time is ticking, and they always say they're working on something big. And Dana's saying, of course, you know, when do we narrow come through big? issue is that a lot of his, the dance partners are taken up. Does it make this? I think there was two options. One might be a long shot because of an injury, which would be DC versus Alexander Gustafsson 2, depending on Gustafsson's hamstring injury and when that could be rehabbed. The other one is the one that seems to be being bandied about a lot, and I don't know who floated out there, but I love the idea of this finally happening. Anderson Silva versus George St. Pierre. That will obviously be a Bellator-ish fight in some aspects, but also be one that I think would bring back a lot of those fans that, that kind of got, shaved off along the way, and a fight that everyone kind of wanted to see for the longest time. Would you do those fights, either one of those fights, or would you do something else instead?
I have questions about GSP wanting it every time I see his comments. Now, I think that could be a failsafe if they have to. But I really, again, have questions. I think GSP only wants fights that extend his legacy. I think he's serious about wanting to potentially cut to lightweight and get a title fight, or at least fight one of these big names, these younger big names, in a fight that matters. I think he would be much more interested in that than a fight that doesn't mean that much unless you're saving the card. Now, at the same time, I like that they want to save this New York card, that Dana wants the MSG cards to be special, because the first two are arguably the two greatest nights I've had covering combat sports. I mean, they've just been electric and amazing and unbelievable. But what's going to happen next, and this is a great question, is I think they're waiting on John Jones. And I think it's certainly sketchy that John Jones' situation is now a full year past. We still don't have a resolution, although you keep hearing those rumors. And I think the other recent people that got out of their USADA suspensions is probably helps the situation, even though it's not an apples and apples comparison between Junior Dos Santos and Anderson Silva and Josh Barnett compared to John Jones. But you have to believe, because they're not panicking and because they haven't announced it yet, they're wondering, can we get Jones cleared retroactive to his date? And can we either do a Gustafsson rematch or a DC 3. Now, DC 3 seems to screw up the timeline, because you don't want DC to lose potentially to Jones and then go into a Brock Lesnar pay-per-view a little bit damaged from the loss, although he would still have the heavyweight title. I get that. But I think John Jones Gustafsson 2 packaged with Nate Diaz is still, viable enough and fantastic. Certainly, you got to come through and swing big and go for it. It's very interesting, this John Jones thing. And if you want to extend the conspiracy further, and I love dabbling with it, I believe in everything I say. I'm saying I'm open-minded to it. Gustafsson got pulled from that 227 card at the last minute, right, with an undisclosed injury. I know it's been disclosed since then. Do you have a feeling like maybe they just thought, we don't really have a good opponent for him, let's put him in the bullpen just in case? Hey, DC Gustafsson 2? It's not horrible either. It fits in the storyline of what Daniel wants to do. Those are the three names that I'm really circling. If GSP is an extreme break glass in case of necessary type of situation, then fine. But I think he wants to fight the winner of Khabib GSP. And you want to talk about scenarios that get me fired up. It has been too long, Josh, since we've had this many fights on the high level, on the type of fights that move pay-per-view buys, that get SportsCenter to talk about it. You know what I'm talking about here. That we've got this many in a row that we can play matchmaker and go, well, this guy beats this guy. What if that guy faces that guy? Man, it has been a long, cold season since the sale, maybe since Conor went away. You can connect the dots of bad TV ratings, of pay-per-views that have bombed, of people missing weight, of interim titles, of everything you can think of. I don't want to put all the eggs in the Conor basket and give him credit. But when they made that Conor announcement and it coincided with Nate, and one night later, 227 was a massive success, and we have great fights to make after that, I feel like the tide has turned. I feel like I see the light. Tell me if you can feel. Can you taste what I'm all? Can you smell what this guy's cooking, Josh Nason?
100%. You're preaching at the gospel, and I'm in the choir. Yes. I'm in the choir. I like it. You can obviously hear Brian talk about all this in the months and years ahead on the In This Corner podcast on CBS Sports. You look for the Twitter handle In This Corner CBS, and obviously available wherever you listen to your podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at B Campbell, B-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L-C-B-S on Twitter. And what else did I miss?
That's about it. You know, that's where you can find it. I do a boxing, MMA, and wrestling episode 3 almost every week. So check it out. Follow me on Twitter, like you mentioned. Hey, follow this guy, Josh Nason. This guy knows what he's talking about, even though I called him Jason Nason to open the show before we went on. But no, we'll forget that.
Ben Campbell, that is just fine with me. Brian Campbell, thanks so much. Thanks for the time, and we look forward to having you back very soon.
Great stuff. Thank you.
All right. Big thanks to Brian Campbell for stopping by. Obviously, you can follow him on Twitter and check out the various podcasts. Again, it's really smart. He does 3 of them, as he alluded to, 1 boxing, 1 wrestling, 1 MMA. So it's not like, you know, our group on the site, you know, guys like Dave and Brian who just mix everything together. You know, Brian keeps them separated. And so if you're not into boxing, you just don't listen to that one, MMA, and so on and so forth. So really smart on that, and also fits all the different interests as well. Let's see. I think that's about it. It's a pretty light weekend overall for fight sports. No UFC, no Bellator. I saw that, just kind of looking at the schedule here the next few weeks, you know, Bellator is running these, smaller shows. I think one of the main events, Pat Curran, I think got injured today. So, one of the main events, I think, is he against AJ McKee, just these smaller shows that don't need to exist. If they match them together, that'd be one thing, but I don't know. You know, it's the thing I've been talking about forever, but it's just, you know, just smaller shows, no real stakes or impact. They're just filling 2-3 hours on a Friday night for Paramount. UFC is off until, I believe, the Lincoln, Nebraska card, if I have that right. Let's see. We'll bring that up now. List of UFC events. And I noticed in Google the other day, they're actually... if you just type in a list of UFC events, it'll actually has like the calendar is actually formatted in Google does that for you, which I thought was pretty cool. Let's see. Yeah, Gaethje Vick, that's coming up in a few weeks, August 25th in Lincoln, Nebraska. What else is on this card? Michael Johnson, Andre Feely as the co-main, or at least second from the top. Courtney Casey, Angela Hill, Ellenberger against Barbarina. That should be decent. And let's see, James Krause, Worley Alves, Rani Yaya. Yeah, there's a lot of Mickey Gall is opening up the show. Mickey Gall versus George Sullivan. Didn't that fight already happen? That's very strange. Let me go back to this. No, Randy Brown, he fought last time. So I'm looking at the other just boring names. Mickey Gall, George Sullivan is actually opening up the show on Fight Pass. Can you believe that? I thought he was kind of a rising star. He lost that Randy Brown fight, but the first fight on the show in Lincoln, Nebraska. What a fall from grace. Joanne Calderwood on that show as well. And then Drew Dober, John Tuck. Yeah, some interesting names on there. It is a show, but obviously Gaethje Vick is the big draw there. Yeah, we'll talk about that as we get a little bit closer to the show. But yeah, there's not a lot going on. G1 is in the wrestling sphere. That's probably obviously the biggest thing going on with three, four events coming up this week. And then that's a wrap. And then obviously SummerSlam next week, TakeOver, and all that good stuff as well. So we'll let you go. Big thanks for stopping by. Again, big thanks to Brian Campbell. Thanks to all of you for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day. So the fact you spend any time with me or anyone on the site, we all greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time. This has been Josh Nace's Punch Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.